Okay, we're continuing with our parsha, Parshat Vayera. There's a gematria that your kids will come home with from elementary school. You might as well know it. How do we remember how many makos are in Vayera and how many makos are in Bo? The first two letters, I tell you the numerical value. In Vayera, it's Vav, 6, plus Aleph, 1 is 7. You have 7 makos in Vayera. And Bo is, Beis Aleph, 2 and 1, 3. You have 3 makos in Bo. So that's an easy way to remember how many plagues are in each parsha. We had discussed Dam. We discussed why the Egyptians were going to be hit with blood. They had prevented the Jewish women from immersing in the waters so that their husbands would stay away from them after they would have their cycle. We had discussed Sephardea and the different opinions among Chazal about how many frogs actually came out of the Nile and why the Egyptians were punished with Tzifardea. The different opinions of as to whether Tzifardea is an alligator, crocodile, or frog, as we commonly view it. And then we started discussing Kinim. Kinim are lice. We don't know what lice are. You think you know what lice are. But halachically, we're not exactly sure if what we call lice today is what the Torah called lice. But at any rate, the Egyptians were hit with lice, and the sorcerers tried to replicate the plague. We discussed that they were allowed to replicate the plagues until now so that they would enter the playing field, and then they would have to concede that they really can't. Now, Ramban says ordinarily they should have been able to make the Kinim. It was Hashem interfering in their black magic that prevented them from making the Kinim. So they couldn't replicate the Kinim. And now they're all embarrassed because they're standing there scratching themselves all over. And again, we had pointed out as we were learning the Parsha that there's an intrinsic message here, as the Medrash Tanchuma tells us. Moshe repeatedly forewarns them. He says, you're going to get this plague. Now, intrinsic to that warning is, let's see what you can do, Pharaoh. You say you're God. Stop me. Right? You say you don't know who Hashem is. Your sorcerers, here, I'm telling you a week in advance, two opinions in the Medrash. One opinion says before each plague there was a week warning and then 3 weeks of a plague. Another opinion says 3 weeks warning and 1 week plague. So everyone's hearing this, the next plague that's coming, and Pharaoh can't do anything. So Hashem is slaughtering holy cows. They worship the Nile, down. They worship Pharaoh, down. Scientists, archaeologists say that in archaeology they found that the Egyptians believed that the god of fertility is the frog. That might explain Makas Tzfardea, that the frog is no longer in charge of anything. Makas Kinim took down the sorcerers. Even they have to admit, it's Be'elokim he. And now we move on. So we covered the Tzach. We said in the series, you have series of 3, 3, and 4. The first two of each series, they get a warning. The third one is without warning. So they got Kinim. Now what's next? Adash, Arov. Yes, sir.
Isn't it an opinion that ordinarily they cannot control Kinim?
Yes. What you already know, I don't think I have to tell you. You're welcome to look at the Ramban on the Rashat Torat Hashem Tmima. We have a class on it online. And tell me what you come up with. Back to our Parsha. Yes, sir. Could you speak up? Maybe they imported dirt. It says the land that was there turned to dirt. At any rate, it's not clear that the land beyond a certain depth became Kinim. It seems only up to a certain depth became Kinim. What? With the water, we brought two opinions as to whether all waters turned to Dam, Rashi, the Medrash, or only the waters in the Nile, but they could. The question is, did they find or didn't they find? The Medrash, which Rashi quotes, says that they dug and whatever they found always turned to blood. So we said that they could have bought water. The Medrash says if they paid for the water, then they could get water. The truth is that the question doesn't begin because this is assuming that they used real materials. It's not clear, as we learned the Gra in the Shulchan Aruch a few weeks ago, that we saw, it seems from the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, that everything they did was sleight of hand. So I own a pitcher, a jug, that has an inner wall. I own this jug. Okay, so it goes like this. You see a plastic jug. Imagine this is like this big, yeah? And really inside you have another plastic layer that does this. Okay? And on the bottom there's like a vacuum. There's a little plug. And you could pour in milk inside the rim of the jug, and the jug looks like it's all full. Okay? So you have a jug that to the viewer looks like it's filled with milk. But really, there's only milk between these two layers, thin layers. And over here by the lip, there's a small indentation where the inner layer goes down. It has a little lip that goes down. So here's a magic trick. I'm giving away one of my secrets, okay? Trade secrets. We take a big newspaper, we roll it into a cone, we hold it over his head, and we say, now if you're going to be a good little boy, we will pour the milk and make sure you don't get wet. And then we tilt the jug. Now what happens? The viewer sees the milk going down. The reason the milk is going down is because the milk keeps pouring into the jug this time, because it goes down the slit. The viewer can't see if it's really pouring into the cone over his head. What he does see is that when I hold the jug like this, there's only this much milk left in there, because all the milk left the rim, the inner rim. I've done this. No milk came out here. All the milk went back into the jug. And now I have this much milk in the jug. So then, what do I say? I say, boy, that's a lot of milk on your head. But I'm going to drink the rest. Hold this. I have my assistant hold the cone. I pour out the rest of the milk. Now everyone sees the milk came out. It's real milk. I drink it, or I offer it to someone in the audience. I put away the jug so no one can look at my evidence. And then I say, now with my magic wand, whatever, right? The rest is history. Sleight of hand. A lot of what the Egyptians did, and according to Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, it seems that perhaps all of it was perception. So when you ask me, but they didn't have water, my answer is, who cares? When you thought they had water, they didn't have water either. I'm saying a lot of what was going on in Egypt was just making it seem like something was happening. When what? Yeah, so that's why I'm answering you working with the other Rishonim, but in fact, it's not so clear to me that the question begins. We discussed this in class. This is a very special 5-shekel coin. It has Ezer Weitzman on it, right? Levi Eshkol, I'm sorry. This 5-shekel coin is not standard. Okay, now what's unique about the Levi Eshkol coin is that when you take it and mash it up, it disappears. But it was in the other hand all along, right? But it didn't look that way. It looked like I took it. That's sleight of hand. Right? Not for sure, because if his magicians can show that they can make the same thing appear through sleight of hand, then he can tell Moshe, okay, you have a good trick. If David Copperfield could make the World Trade Center disappear, or the Empire State Building disappear, or ship disappear, and it's all games with mirrors, so then, so then you made the Nile. You're a good trickster, but I could play the trick too. Not on your scale, but you didn't prove anything yet. So coming back to our parsha. So we have Arov. Wild animals penetrate Egypt. We have stampedes. We have the city being destroyed. And obviously wild animals come in. A lot of people are getting killed. And that's what we also discussed. The Medrash about this animal that had a long hand. It would stick it into the houses and open the doors so they couldn't even protect themselves. We move on to Dever. So in Arov, Hashem shows He controls the animal. In Dever, Hashem shows He controls the lives of the animals. And so Egyptian animals are dropping dead. But let's look at the Pasuk. There's a Pasuk people don't notice. Yes, sir. What? I don't know. Rashi says a mixture of wild animals. Ta'arovit, yeah. So at the end of Arov, the wild animals run away. They shouldn't take advantage of their hides. They don't drop dead. And then we come to Dever. If you don't do it, there's going to be a heavy Dever tomorrow. A lot of animals are going to die. And so the Egyptian cattle drops dead, and no Jewish cattle drop dead, and they go and they check, and nothing happens to the Jewish cattle. So that's Dever. Obviously, so we have Dever, and Paro checks. He sends to see if a Jewish animal died. And then we move on to Shechin. So in Shechin we have many miracles. It says Moshe's taking ash, and Aaron lifts the dust, right? He takes two handfuls of dust and he pours it into Moshe's one hand, and Moshe tosses it to the heaven and it spreads out over Egypt, and all of Egypt. Now, I'm sorry, I said dust. He takes ash. Takes ash from a furnace, everyone is covered with boils. So here we have to ask ourselves, why did Moshe have to throw the ash? Hashem couldn't make the makkah of boils without throwing ash over Egypt. The answer is that we find often that Hashem says, do an action that has some kind of connection to the miracle I'm doing, and then I'll make it continue. Technically, Hashem could have just made it, bam, everyone comes out with boils. Hashem said, no, I want you to do an action of taking the ash and throwing it over Egypt. I'm still looking if there's a medrash that discusses which kivshan they took it from. Which furnace. Is this connected to the kivshan that Avraham Avinu was thrown into? It doesn't say from which kivshan they took it. They took ash. So I'm looking for a medrash that'll tell us. Yes?
Sometimes if they don't do well enough, they really hear what will happen.
Correct? Correct? Hashem says, so the Ramban says the action is the beginning of the miracle. I wouldn't call it ishtadlut. I would say it's Hashem saying, "Naaseh Adam." Hashem says to the earth, "Let's make man together, you and me." And the Hasidim like to say, Hashem says to man, "Let's make a mensch out of you." Naaseh Adam, you and I. I'm giving you the tools. You have to make it into an Adam. Coming back to our parsha, so the ash scatters miraculously over Egypt, and everyone comes out with boils. Now boils come with fever. That means the Egyptians are all covered with boils. I don't know if we can imagine that. They're breaking out in these big red boils, and people are sick. They have high fevers, and Paro doesn't listen. This one doesn't break him. So everyone's suffering, but he doesn't listen. So Moshe comes out to Pharaoh as he's going out to the Nile, and he says, Hashem says, send my nation, because if not, I'm going to show you something you'll really have to admit. There are none like me. Technically, I could kill you all, but Hashem says, I'm leaving you around. Who asked this last class? Hashem said, I want to show you my strength so that you publicize me throughout the land. And that's what we discussed, the Medrash, that Paro stayed alive and did his duty. He went around telling people what had happened. So Hashem says, tomorrow there'll be hail. Now, with the hail comes a very big challenge to the Egyptians. Hashem says, bring in your cattle, bring in your servants, bring in your people into the homes, and whoever's inside the home won't be hurt. So this is a miracle within the miracle. Because if you have hail the size of a boulder that's killing people, then why is it not falling on the homes? It's not like the Egyptians have such wonderful homes. Hashem says, anyone that will be in any form of home, a sukkah, a hut, any type of home, I won't kill. So, what? Well, it's cornering the Egyptians. The Egyptians now have to make a choice the next day. Hashem said, if you want to live, bring you and your cattle and your servants home into a house. What is the Egyptian going to say? Pharaoh's God, the Nile's God, the sheep is God, Hashem isn't God, you all go to work tomorrow. He has to be very hard-hearted. And in this Makkah, Hashem is making the Egyptians, they have to admit, is Hashem, do I fear Hashem or not? He's given them 6 Makkos before this, and now they have to decide, am I with it or not? And that's what the Pasuk says, Hayarei et dvar Hashem, me'avdei Faro. It sounds like Paro did not publicize this. Paro's servants knew this. What's he going to do? Go and tell everyone? Beware, God's doing something tomorrow. That's Pharaoh's shooting himself in the leg. So his servants were aware of it. And those who feared Hashem took their cattle and their servants into the house. But there were people who did not. There were people who would not fear Hashem. So they left their cattle outside. And so when this hail comes down, you have a lot of people getting killed unnecessarily, people and cattle. And here the Egyptians are given a chance to demonstrate each individual, where are you, or at least the servants. Yes?
Individuals who went inside survived the last time?
No, that wouldn't help them in Bechoros. So over here again, the Torah tells us nothing happened in Goshen. Next week we will discuss whether the Jews only lived in Goshen or primarily lived in Goshen. So Pharaoh sends servants to go and call Moshe and Aaron, and he says, this time I made a mistake. Hashem is the tzaddik, and me and my nation are wicked this time. Yes? That's where they started out. But in next week's parasha, Hashem will pass over the Jewish home to hit the Egyptian home. That certainly sounds like Jews are living among Egyptians. Yeah. No. What? You're saying means they lived outside Goshen. Okay. I hear. So Moshe says, I'm going to leave the city and pray to Hashem. Here we have the concept, you don't pray in the presence of an idol. This is relevant to people who visit homes where there might be a cross. You don't pray there. When I was growing up, so the hospital in the community I grew up in was called Good Samaritan, and every bed had a cross over it. You can't pray over there next to that. So Moshe says, I'm going to leave the city, I'm going to go to a place where there are no idols, and there I will pray to Hashem, and the hail will stop. But I know, says Moshe, that you guys don't really fear Hashem yet. Yes? I think it says not, but I have to double check. Want to wait a second? I'll look it up.
Could you just cover it? Would that be permissible?
The problem with Moshe touches on the point which we will begin next parsha with, which is the question, do you fear Hashem? At the end of the day, that's the question that's really at the core of everything we do. How much is Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid? How much is Hashem a factor in what we do? It decides if we're upset. It decides if we're scared. The more Hashem says, the more a person says Hashem is here, the more a person can stand up to life's challenges without fear. the more a person can make the right decisions. We constantly make decisions. We choose how to invest our time, our focus, our money. At the root of it all is what Moshe tells Paro, and he will come back to this point in the beginning of next week's parsha, and he'll say, why do you refuse to have respect of Hashem, to be admatai me'anta le'anot, to be fearful, to be respectful of Hashem? Why is Moshe saying on this plague I have to leave the city to pray? Because on this makkah, Mitzrayim was filled with idols. The Egyptians took in all their cattle that they worshipped, which is again forcing the Egyptians to ask themselves, I'm pulling in the cattle to save them from Hashem. Which is, again, if you believe this cattle is God, then how come it can't protect itself? So this time, the cattle was in the city. Ordinarily, the cattle was outside. This time, the city was filled with Avodah Zarah because they had brought the cattle in to save it. So we've covered seven of the plagues, and Bez Hashem, we're going to pick up here next week. We know Pharaoh's heart is hardened, and he refuses to send us, and that's where we leave off. We've covered so far, we said the Makos took 12 months, so we start in Nisan, we end in Nisan, we've covered more than half a year, and by the end of this week's parsha, the Jews are no longer working in Mitzrayim. Chazal say, B'Rosh Hashanah Paseka Avodah, the Gemara says that on Rosh Hashanah, 6 months before the end of the plagues, before Pesach, we already stopped working. So by the end of this week's parsha, we're already free in that sense, that we're not working. The Jews have 6 months to think. From Tishrei to Nisan, they're not working for the Egyptians. They still view themselves as Egyptian slaves. They still think they have no right to ownership. They still believe that the sheep is a god. But they've come to a point where at least they're not working. The Egyptians can't make them work anymore. The Makos have affected them to the point where they think it's illogical. How can I make the Jews work? And that brings us full circle to the beginning of the parasha, where we have the four terms of redemption. The second term was, I will save you from their labor, which already happened. By the time we end this week's parsha, we're not doing forced labor anymore. We have ended the servitude to Mitzrayim in that sense. We're still there, we still view ourselves as slaves, but we're not working. We're free men in that sense, we have free time.